Come on, come on, come on, come on.
To Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Featuring the latest songs from artists in Canada and from around the world.
Hosted by DJs from coast to coast to coast.
30 minutes of Canada's newest music downloaded exclusively from the Earshot's digital distribution system.
You're listening to
Earshot Daily.
Earshot Daily. Earshot Daily.
Why, hello. I'm your host today for Earshot Daily, John Adamian, recording at Local FM 107.3 in St. John, New Brunswick. You can check us out at localfm.ca. Okay, we're kicking off today with St. Johners, the Sunnyside Uppers. Catchy poppy tune here called Runaway.
Submit your music to be on the show at earshot-distro.ca.
All right, that's the Monoxides with their new single, Radio Sunshine. You might remember that name from the 90s. They had a pretty big record called Galaxy of Stooges. They're from Moncton, New Brunswick. And I pulled that song off of earshot-distro.ca. The track you heard at the top of the show, The Sunnyside Uppers, is from the local FM charts here from April 21st. All right, here we go with some beautiful shoegaze from St. John, New Brunswick. This is the band Chic with their tune Fine.
Information on the show, check out earshot-distro.ca.
We'll be right back.
future of music is here.
Earshot Daily.
Welcome back to Earshot Daily. That is Adam K. and the Natural Causes the legendary Adam Kay, I should say, from St. John, New Brunswick. The tune was called If I Wind Up Dead, Corey Bonnevie Did It. That was from the local FM April 21st charts. Before that, Dad Patrol, weird art rock band from Fredericton, New Brunswick. Their new single, Worms, Larva, Insects, Creepy Crawlers. I pulled that one from earshot-distro.ca. You should upload your music there too. That's how you could find yourself on an episode of Earshot Daily. Check it out, earshot-distro.ca. All right, now we've got Mark McLaughlin from Fredericton, New Brunswick, with his tune, All I Can Say. Another Earshot-Distro tune. Love the groove on this one. All right, here we go.
Your music to be on the show at earshot-distro.ca.
White picket fence in the front yard, enough money in the bank for a new car. Sitting by the fire drinking Pinot, that's where we're going, just gotta find a path though. But fair ain't getting us there. Fair ain't getting us there. Rolling with the punches when change comes, knowing
knowing you won't leave me for anyone. Feeling blessed not to wake up depressed. It's all within reach if we can just see that face. Held so tight that it can't expand. Just two young kids and their innocence. Hot talks, late nights in the kitchen. Through the ups and the downs, I just want you around. Oh, baby, I think we figured it out. Yeah, babe.
Earshot Daily on demand. It's easy.
Go to earshot-daily.ca today.
Or any other day. That's what on demand means. But you knew that. Okay, let's get back to the show.
Let's get back to the show. Let's get back to the show.
OK, ça c'est Rodney the Walrus avec leur chanson Mollusque, musicien acadien de Nouveau-Brunswick. And before that, singer-songwriter from Hampton, New Brunswick, Zach Ingalls, with his tune Fair off his Get Ahead EP. OK, that's the end of the show today. Thanks a lot for listening to Earshot Daily. I've been your host, John Adam Ian, recording at localfm.ca in St. John, New Brunswick. Check me out, too, if you want my solo stuff, johnadamian.com, and I'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Earshot Daily,
heard across the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
For more information, visit earshot-distro.ca and support community radio at ncra.ca.
Until tomorrow, or Monday, if it's Friday.
Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoff. Thanks for tuning in. This is edition 315. On the broadcast this week, I'm going to be sharing a conversation with trade unionist and activist Leandro Lafrendi, who is a union organizer based in Rio in Brazil. Leandro was involved in organizing with union workers, members across different labor unions in Brazil to participate in the popular demonstrations in Brazil's Amazon region in the city of Belém in the context of the UN COP summit this past fall. Leandro, I think, speaks to some critical points around understanding the interconnections between climate justice and union and labor movements. It was really a pleasure to speak to Leandro for this edition of Free City Radio. Here's our conversation.
Social movement forces in Brazil are vast. There's many different factions, and that has manifested in recent decades in very important ways. There was an important gathering recently in Pará State, in Belém, around the COP, where social movement forces, including unions, indigenous groups, different environmental organizations came together for a people's forum that was autonomous from the United Nations Climate Summit. Of course, all these organizations also are working around the year on different campaigns and initiatives. And it's always, I think, interesting to see the dynamics between a left of center government and social movements, which is quite different from a context like Canada or in the United States. So, Leandro, you work and organize with oil workers, and were actually present at the People's Forum, which I find something is that in and of itself is something interesting to talk about. Maybe first, if you could just start by an introduction of yourself and the organizing work that you do.
Okay, I'm glad to be participating in this interview, and I want to say hi to all the listeners. My name is Leandro Lanfredi. I'm an oil worker for 18 years now. I'm a member, a leader in Rio de Janeiro's Oil Workers Union and in our National Federation of Oil Workers. We have two different federation of oil workers here in Brazil, and that's very connected to what you were starting to say. A main issue in oil workers and in many social movements in Brazil is and how do we fight the extreme right? We have extreme right here, movements aligned with Trumpism, but also with how do we align or not, or do we maintain an independent stance in front of a government that speaks as has a social agenda in its speech, but in many ways it's a continuity of all the attacks on workers, on indigenous groups that were inherited from previous governments. And myself, besides being an oil worker and a leader in our union here in Rio, I'm a writer in a website here called Esquerda Diário, which is part of an international network of workers' websites. In English, it's called Left Voice. So you can check it out there. I have a couple of articles in English there as well. So that's a little bit about me.
Thank you, Leandro, for that context. So let's get into this last point, the political point you raised around the dynamics in Brazil today. And I think it's something that is important and interesting for other social movements to think about. The progressive movements in Brazil have, in some ways, dealt with questions of state power in a context that's very different from Canada or the United States or the vast majority of Western Europe. And so maybe just talk about how that's playing out in this contemporary moment. And maybe let's start by talking about the COP gathering in Pará and your participation in the People's Forum.
All right. So most of the oil workers' unions and many unions participated, but we had different stances on the issues. Let's say everyone is critical of environmental change and critical of what capitalism is doing. But the majority of the oil workers' union supported the new oil platforms that are gonna be installed in the Amazon basin. Our union got divided, so we are not for, but we couldn't approve a position against it. I'm personally against it. It makes no sense having new oil installations, which under capitalism will have to be a lot of oil being produced and sold and burned. So it makes no sense. And there's we need to fight for other kind of jobs and decent work conditions to start an energy transition, which will have to challenge profits. So myself, I was representing my position. We are critical. Our union here in Rio, we approve the position that we are. We say there is no energy transition being done by any government. That includes Lula's Brazil's president government, and we are critical of our state company, oil company Petrobras, which I work for. So we have that critical stance, but as of the new basin that's starting to get explored there, we couldn't approve a position against, but we stopped approving a position for it, and most of the unions were actually supporting it and were there in that major manifestation together with indigenous groups that are against it, together with environmentalist groups that are against, but they were supporting. It's a difficult position with oil workers, as you can imagine, because they get all this propaganda that we need more oil, we need more oil, that's your jobs. So it's very important for me that unions are not, they cannot be just something that is looking for your job and your wage. Because we are part of this world, and there is a world beyond our corporations where we spend part of our lives. Our children, our families, our communities depend on the air, on the water, on the environment we are part. So we need to have so I strive for a position that unions must be like, defend all the peoples. So we strive to have a coalition with indigenous groups. So we support indigenous groups' manifestations here, not only for land, which would be like a traditional manifestations, but we also help them and participate in even like cultural and symbolic activities, and try to establish an alliance together with other unions, together with let's say we here. Also try to work together with families of victims of police violence. So we try to establish this coalition of forces. So unions usually they are controlled by bureaucrats, and there is no democracy in the unions, and they are very like contained and just looking for rank and file little things, and they don't care about the contractors. So I'm actually wearing a shirt for equal rights for contractor workers right now in this interview, because I'm in union activity after the interview. So so we try to have this class oriented position, and this class oriented position is very connected to what you were asking. Like, so it's a major issue here in Brazil. It has been for the past decades. And how, because we had a very strong social movements and labor unions, but that has weakened. And that has weakened especially with Lula's government and PT government, because they start orienting workers that you don't need to protest, you don't need to organize, you just need to vote for them. But like, things don't get done without worker movement, without protest. They just simply don't get done. So like, you had labor reform, you had pension reform under Bolsonaro government, and that's all that legislation is still standing in Lula's government past 3 years. Let's look just in Petrobras, in oil workers. We had facilities that were sold during Bolsonaro government to foreign companies. They weren't retrieved, they didn't return in past 3 years. So things don't get done. And things will get done by our protest, by our own independent movement. And that's something, that's a position Rio de Janeiro's union stands for, and I strive for it.
For people who aren't aware and who are hearing this, most people, maybe not everybody, of course, will have heard that there was a COP UN climate summit in Pará state in Belém, but you participated in the People's Forum. Can you just quickly describe what that was? Just please talk a little bit about that event, just so people have a picture of what, just a little bit of the context. That's how we first started discussing also with each other.
Yes. So there is this main event that is just a, that's just pretend to care about the environment. That's the actual COP conference with a lot of lobbies from oil companies and mining companies and huge agricultural and pollution lobbies. That nothing got done. They drafted a document that doesn't even mention the end of fossil fuels. Parallel to that main official conference, there was a people's summit, and that's a tradition in most COPs to have it. We had, I don't know, a couple of thousand, 40,000, 50,000 people participating, from indigenous groups, social movements, labor unions, students, all getting together in different panels and events and rallies and manifestations that occurred parallel. So it was held mainly in a public university, Universidade Federal do Pará, a couple of kilometers away from the main event, but also was held in different places. So there was this major place where a majority of indigenous groups camped. That was like this village, this indigenous village in middle of Pará. There were different things happening parallel to the COP and to protest and to demand action, critical that the governments and the corporations, they don't do their part. They just care about profits. So it's the people that will have an answer to this growing environmental issues we are facing in the world as a consequence of capitalism, in my opinion.
So, I mean, what's interesting just about what you noted, Leandro, the indigenous groups did block the entrance of the UN summit at some point and were able to win some concessions about land rights from the government, at least on a symbolic level. We'll see if they're implemented. That's important. Also, just to think about the context of the UN summit on climate, we've talked on this program to some people who are involved in pushing the BLM action mechanism around the just transition, and most of them within the COP summit, and most of them said that without the pressure of social movement forces present around the UN summit or the People's Forum, there would have been no movement on that actually having some sort of role in the declaration coming out of the UN climate summit. Some of the sort of strategic and structural issues that you mentioned, Leandro, around the role of labor are interesting for listeners to consider here, because the populist right, let's say in a Canadian context, which is another country very dependent on oil revenues, and there's a structural dependence in the economy, which maybe not a lot of people want to recognize, but on oil exploitation of indigenous territories here, the populist right has been pushing and mobilizing oil workers in the Canadian context. You work with oil workers and are aligned with left social movements. So I just wanted to look into that a little bit more, because maybe some people sort of see that as a write-off because of the sort of nature of those jobs. So, you know, there's different discussions happening around that. I've heard in the past some people talking about the importance of bringing workers in that sector along towards, you know, a transition process, you know, and I'm sure it's a very complicated and layered process and conversation within your union. But I do think it's interesting to sort of mirror back to Canada about why it's important to actually address workers in this particular sector.
Yes, it's not an easy job, especially we have it a little more easier here because there's a left tradition in oil workers in Brazil. That's something specific. But like in all strategic workers' positions, we need to have cells. We need to have little groups that start questioning, because no one enrolled in a company saying like, oh, let me work in something that I can get cancer, I'm gonna ruin the world's environment and trample on indigenous people's rights. No, people enrolled in the company or because it paid higher wages, that's all, than other companies, not because they wanted a, but they with time they get all this propaganda and they're defending their wages. But we need to start questioning and we need to work and try to convince at first a couple, but then more of them, that we can defend our wages, we can defend other things. Like, I'll give you an example that I try to use with Brazilian oil workers, because many support the new oil fields, and I try to question it. Because a study shows that the oil platforms, each three of them, they create around like 1,000 jobs here in Brazil, 1,000 jobs. So it's, they'll have around 20, so it will be around 10,000 jobs in that Amazon area that they are gonna start exploring. You have this major research facility by Petrobras here in Rio de Janeiro that employs 12,000 people. So why not demand the creation of a new research facility in that area? All right, let's create jobs in the Amazon. 12,000 research jobs. And that will be quality wages as well. So we can demand other things, but But in order to do that, we need strong social movement, and we need to challenge a little bit the prophets. And when we say things like that, some workers, it's like, well, it makes sense. Well, we could demand that, because we can't let the wage and job argument be with the populist, and we just say like, oh, I don't care. I don't want that that facility here. And they say, well, but we are creating jobs. Well, we need to answer. We want other kind of jobs. Yes, we want jobs, but we want other kind of jobs. So that's what we try to argue here. Why not create a research facility in that area? Let's research on biofuels and other things. We'll create jobs. It won't be as profitable as oil, I'm sure, but who cares? That's the shareholders' problems, not the workers' problems, how profitable it is. We need our wages and jobs, and I'm sure if we have a research facility, we'll have much better relations with the indigenous groups around than having the oil platforms pumping smoke and fumes and other things in the surrounding areas. So we need but in order for that position to gain traction, we need also like different kind of unions, I think, because most unions they just don't care about that, and many times that they align with populist positions. We had important labor unions that supported Trump to get an American example that I'm more familiarized than with Canadian examples, I'm sorry. And they support this aggressive stances, and we need other kind of unions, not only in their political position to challenge capitalism, to be critical of what's going on in the environment, but also in order to have power, we need democratic unions. So that's something we're striving here as well. We were the first union here with oil workers. Other unions, they have this tradition here in Brazil, but we have now just created. We have a representative body of elected delegates that's more important than the labor leadership, the union leadership. So we created a decision body that's more important than the elected leadership of the union. Why? Because we want more participation. We want rank and file workers to have their say and control the union. So it's those things are connected. This non-self-centered orientation, non-aligned with the government, but independent class struggle position, and democratic labor unions, where workers have a say, they have a vote, they control the union. So we need to return to the basics. Unions were founded in that sense. And me as an anti-capitalist revolutionary socialist, I work for that on a daily basis to create those orientations here. And one thing that's important, that an important union, when it starts working in a different way, mm-hmm. it starts influencing, because it's an important union. As Canada, Rio de Janeiro specifically is very oil dependent, so our union has like this a very important. It's very heard, like other unions and people, like they look for the oil workers because we are an important part of the economy here.
Well, I mean, it's being spoken about in different contexts that the shift you were describing, let's say around research facilities or the production of different types of energy, that workers already familiar with dynamics in that particular sector are well suited towards making that shift. We've seen examples of this in China as one example. The dynamics around democratic realities in China are very different, and obviously that is not something to celebrate in terms of the autonomy of unions there. However, there are possibilities on a technical level to think about what role union workers can play in the development of new technologies and new economic frameworks of power around energy production, which are complicated conversations. But I think it's really interesting to hear your voice, Leandro, to think about the social movement fabric of the discussions that did take place around the UN summit on climate in Pará State and in Belém, and particularly around the People's Forum, and to see that as connected to broader social movement process in Brazil. So thank you so much for the conversation today.
Thank you.
That was a conversation with Leandro Lafrendi, who is a labor activist based in Brazil, in Rio. It was great to speak with him about the participation of labor and organized unions in the climate justice protests that took place at the margins of the UN Climate Summit this fall in Belém, Brazil. This has been another edition of Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. We air weekly on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal on Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on CGLO 1690 a.m. also in Montreal on Thursdays at 8 a.m. on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg on Tuesdays at 8 a.m. and Fridays at 1:30 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston on Wednesdays at 11:30 a.m. on CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria on Saturdays at 7 a.m., on Met Radio 1280 a.m. in Toronto on Fridays at 5:30 a.m., on CKCU 93.1 FM in Ottawa on Tuesdays at 2 p.m., on CJSF 90.1 FM in Vancouver on Tuesdays at 4 p.m., and on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick, on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. You can listen to our archives at soundcloud.com/freecityradio. We're also a podcast. Look us up. Just search Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I will speak to you soon.